Welcome to episode 7 of Intersections on the Spectrum. The Intersections on the Spectrum podcast is the brainchild of Doug Fletcher and Kelly Brown Johnson, created to discuss intersectional issues within the autistic community and give visibility to commonly marginalized, repressed, underrepresented, or erased identities and issues. We aim to introduce you to the people and stories you didn't know about but needed to hear, and hope that by seeing yourself represented in the community, allows you to feel seen.
Today, excited to have the creator of the Nigh Functioning Autism Instagram account, one of my favorite follows on Instagram. Tiffany, welcome.
Hello.
Wanted to start out, you know, we all have more than, you know, one identity. What would you say are the identities that best describe you?
I would say disabled, Black, American, Afro-Latinx, gender nonconforming, parent, and advocate.
Wow, thank you. That's fantastic. So we also know that you're epileptic, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are there some common misconceptions about epileptics that people have that you wish would just go away?
Oh, yes. The most common and harmful one, I think, is the people who have seizures are on drugs. That's very harmful. It keeps people from getting help or keeps people from recognizing actual epileptic seizures when they're happening. Another thing is after or before a seizure, somebody may act a little different and they may be seen as drunk or as on drugs or acting out of a psychotic break. And that can actually be very dangerous if you're around, like, say, police, for instance. So yeah, I think that would be one of them also. Not all seizures are convulsive, so not like the ones you always see on TV or movies. Like, I have seizures that I would have to tell you that I'm having one for you to even notice. Also, I have seizures that make me, like, throw stuff on the ground. So I have broken a few things in stores and at home. So those are, there are several different types of seizures, not just the convulsive ones.
I just want to really touch on that point that you made, how dangerous it can be for certain people, especially Black and Indigenous people. That is often a common fear, you know, or people will say we're on drugs or we're alcoholics. Happens a lot with Indigenous people, especially when they try and go help in hospitals. I'm speaking about in Canada. But it's often that anytime anybody's acting a little bit different, the first conclusion that somebody wants to jump to is that it must be drugs or alcohol, and that
exactly.
They're not getting the help that they need, and that is a very serious problem that our societies have.
You mentioned on your Instagram account that you support the keto diet and cannabis for epileptics. Can you talk a little bit about those in terms of the benefits of keto diet and cannabis?
Okay, so as far as keto, it's short for ketogenic diet. It was started for children who had epilepsy in the early 1900s. It was found to be the only way of keeping their seizures down or preventing them altogether. So it's been, you know, over 100 years, and people have found out that it's good for other things and even for adult epileptics. And for me, it's probably been my biggest help for preventing my seizures and not having to take as much medicine. It has been hard to stick with in the pandemic, but I definitely need to get back to it. Not having carbs or sugar allows fat to be replaced as an energy source in the brain. And for some reason, that makes a difference in brain health and the way the brain uses its signaling. So for cannabis, I really don't know if that has made a difference in preventing my seizures. And cannabis, I mean, as in THC and CBD alike. But I use both of those for getting help with my anxiety and my sleep. And two of my biggest seizure triggers are stress and a lack of sleep. So that right there indirectly helps my seizures. But more directly, it actually helps me recover much faster after I've had a seizure. So after a seizure, I feel very groggy, out of it. I can't speak. I can't think really. And I usually need to sleep for hours and hours, sometimes 24 hours after a seizure. So having cannabis right after I have a seizure means I can either use a fast-acting method or a long-acting method, and that helps me not have to sleep as much. And it kind of gets that groggy feeling, like my brain is out of sorts. It helps my brain feel like it's coming back together. So for me, it's more of a recovery tool that really helps and impacts my epilepsy. And both of those together allow me to use a lot less pharmaceutical anti-seizure meds, which are extremely important in preventing seizures. However, they have huge side effects. So people who are on anti-seizure meds, they can have dental problems, like drowsiness throughout the day, memory problems, weight loss or weight gain. It just makes you feel like kind of in a daze, which is what seizures also do. So both of those together have helped me kind of replace some of that. And I can use keto and cannabis to kind of keep a good balance.
It's always amazing to me how the pharmaceutical companies often just kind of, I'm not speaking from a place of necessarily like knowledge or education here, but it just seems that sometimes they settle on certain drugs and then people are living with side effects, like really serious side effects of those drugs, and nothing has changed in like 25 years to develop something that, you know, would improve the quality of life for people. So it's always an interesting thing that I notice when it comes to certain conditions, and especially mm-hmm. those things that affect certain people or types of people, I find.
Yeah, the anti-seizure drugs pretty much all have a base of these certain side effects that you just, like, if you have epilepsy, you have to deal with the side effects of these medicines no matter what. So that's pretty much all the drugs in that class are kind of heavy on the side effects in less ways and more ways. But you're right.
And just also touching on the keto diet, I mean, that's kind of, I knew people who were on it before for legitimate reasons and were trying to control their epilepsy, but it seems to have become a bit more of a fad diet and very popularized. So I'm wondering if you want to maybe comment on that. Do you feel that has had an impact on, let's say, your access to the foods that you need?
Oh, yes.
Brought down, changed prices in terms of things like that because it's been so mainstream media now?
Yes. So this happened. I'm also gluten-free because I have celiac. So this happened back when gluten-free was a fad, and it's now happening with keto. And I love the fact that I have a lot more options. I can go into the regular grocery stores now and get gluten-free keto products. It's really made a very beneficial impact in my life for it to become mainstream, just like the gluten-free. And everything's a lot cheaper now. Not only accessible, but it's accessible by price as well. Like, I can just go order from anywhere and spend almost the same amount I would, you know, for the regular food. So yeah, it's been great.
Okay, good to know. I know for me, like, I started going gluten-free when I was in my 20s, so it's almost 20 years now, and the food was just crap.
Yeah, it was terrible. It was nasty.
Like, it's just, yeah, it was like cardboard. And it's, you know, it's expanded a lot. There's so many more choices now. It's so much easier.
Yes.
But at the same time, I find that, like, especially restaurants, they don't necessarily take it seriously.
Yeah, that's
Lucky
true as
for
well
me,
yeah.
I'm not celiac, so I don't have to worry that much, but it's still like, it's still, I find that food restrictions or food allergies, they need to be taken very seriously by people. It's not just a fad. It's, there's a real medical reason a lot of the time. So,
yeah. And that is part of another opposite issue is that it has become a fad. People think of it as a fad and think like, when I say I can't be exposed to gluten and I can't have these carbs, people would think, oh yes, you can. You just don't want to. And that, right. That's the other side of it. But I think there's a lot more positives in that these things have become mainstream than negatives.
So now you sometimes use spoken words, but you're also an AAC user. Can you talk about some of the not so obvious ways that AAC helps autistic people that can't speak?
So yes, so a lot of people who are autistic also have epilepsy like I do. And I know for me, after seizures, sometimes in the days leading up to seizures, it is very hard to speak, make words, find words. So anybody who has like intermittent speech problems, and for real, that's most autistic people as well, I find that I am a lot more confident in conversations knowing that I have a source of communication other than speech that I can use if I need it. So before, I would not try to involve myself in conversations or even do interviews like this because I wouldn't know how long my speech would last. And, you know, not to be embarrassed or to get extra frustrated, I had just really stopped. You know, I would never say yes to an interview, a long conversation, anything like that. I know I'd be frustrated at times. So this has helped me to even be involved in these kinds of things because I know I have a source of communication to use if I need it. Other ways is I touched on word finding or memory problems, or for people with like alexithymia who have, you know, problems being in touch or having the words for emotions or feelings. I normally use my AAC device as I would text and then use that device for speech generation. But on these AAC devices or apps, you can also pre-program in words, phrases, or things or feelings that you wouldn't have access to any other time. And I always know I have a backup when that happens as well. So for me, it's just made me a lot more confident in therapy is really how I started this because me and my therapist, even being in the same room, would, you know, I'd have to rely on texting her through the phone. And eventually she was like, you know, you should start using this a lot more. And that's when I found AAC as a way of communication.
That's really interesting. One thing that you just mentioned that really resonated with me was that, you know, I support autistic person on a weekly basis who is also epileptic. And there's certainly days where we'll meet where this person doesn't necessarily have a lot of words. And I'm like, all right, we'll use your AAC. No problem. But I never made the potential connection that they had a seizure, and then that was affecting their verbal ability. So I was wondering, how did you initially make that connection?
It took me being re-diagnosed with both autism spectrum and epilepsy as an adult. So these were things that I hadn't even thought about that happened in my life before. But as an adult, I was diagnosed as autistic and epileptic again. And having several EEGs over the past few years, which is where they put the electrodes on your brain, and you have to go into the hospital for a certain amount of time, and they take video, and you have to write down everything you feel. And I began to make the connection between what the EEG was telling my neurologist when I was having seizures and how I would feel after a while. So then I got to notice when she would say, well, you had a seizure here and you had a seizure here. And I noticed the seizures, how they made me feel. And I finally understood. Because when you're having a seizure, I mean, if it's not like a convulsive, obvious seizure, even to oneself, you might not understand that that's a seizure. So being connected with the EEG helped me understand, okay, this is how I feel when this type of seizure happens, and this is how I feel this way. So just several times in the hospital in the last couple of years has helped me make that connection.
Mm. I think one of the frustrating things is with AAC is that sometimes insurance denies coverage for AAC. So if that is the case for some people out there, are there any resources or maybe workarounds that you can recommend to them?
So for me, I started off with the smartphone that I had, the tablet that I had, and some free apps. So on my Android phone, there's an app called Speech Assistant. It's free to use, but even if you want to pay for it, it's only like $6 for life. So just having my phone and that was the first step.
They are usually in every region. An assistive technology lending library. There are organizations that provide them more grants to do so. There are even programs of use devices that recycle them after a person changes devices.
I know for me, I have an app. It's a free app called the Emergency Chat app. It was created by an autistic teenager, actually. But I don't think it reads out loud. I think we only text back and forth. But at least it's there. For me, I put it with a warning, like so that if I'm having a panic attack or something, it explains what's happening and what to do with me. So I just hand them the phone and say, stop asking me questions and just take me to a quiet place, and then we can chat back and forth.
Oh, that's pretty convenient because most AAC is not like a one touch when you have a panic. So that actually is a pretty good thing for emergencies.
Yeah, it's cool. So yeah, it's free. Emergency chat app.
Yay.
Autistic maid. What kind of stories would you like to hear as we move forward with this podcast? Like we said at the beginning, you are interview number 7, and we're always looking for more people that we need to amplify their voices. So who would you love to hear more about, or what kind of stories?
I think it's important to highlight that for Black and Brown autistic people, there is a greater risk of being in trouble at school or by the police. Also, not being able to answer questions from police, not maintain steady eye contact, or having to use sign language or AAC devices can all be extremely dangerous for any disabled person when interacting with police, but especially Black and Brown autistic people. All of these things are a matter of life and death, and we don't have the time to wait for police culture to change as we can interact with them at any moment.
Yep, 100%. There's another organization that I got connected with called Lives in the Balance. I don't know if you've heard of them. They've made a documentary. It's the same name. It's also called Lives in Balance. And it talks about that school-to-prison pipeline. It talks about the, over-policing in schools, and especially how it affects what they call children with behaviors. So anybody with any sort of diagnosis, or even if they don't have, they might not have a diagnosis, but they're not behaving the way that teachers want them to comply in such a way that it's leading to over disciplinary action on children being suspended, they're not able to learn then. That's a whole other story and probably a whole other podcast, but
I actually had one of my best friends, he was a non-speaking autistic, and he was actually jailed after a meltdown in school, like jailed, like hard times in juvenile detention for a meltdown, like went through the whole system over that.
And that just sets up trauma. And the thing is that what people don't realize, it doesn't just traumatize the person going through it, it traumatizes all the other students who are seeing this. It actually, you know that seclusion and restraint actually even traumatizes the people who are doing it. So there's no good outcome for any of this.
No.
Yeah, that's another work that I'm trying to get into and trying to see if I can make changes.
That's a whole nother podcast for sure.
Yeah.
So I'm going to do my best to transition from that, but and plug my co-host because she recently wrote a great book, How to Parent Like an Autistic, and I believe recently I saw that it is now an audio tape. Is that correct?
So it finally made it to audiobook, and that
audiobook.
It took three tries before it got approved, so it's a long journey.
So Tiffany, I know you're a parent as well. What advice would you give to parents out there in terms of how to parent like an autistic?
So for me, I think the part about being an autistic child that is universal, maybe with all children, but especially autistic and disabled children, is the consistent running theme of your actions and your words and your movements being constantly misrepresented and misunderstood and misinterpreted. And I remember that very much as a child. So one thing I always try to give grace to my children is that maybe I'm misinterpreting their actions, and maybe they need the benefit of the doubt, or they really don't know why they did something, you know? So I don't lead with anger or punishment. Again, I try. I'm still human. But I try to hash out these so-called behaviors and see what the intent was, where it came from, and we just kind of talk about what to do better versus, you know, just immediately getting angry. Because I remember times that people have gotten angry for me, adults, when there's something like either my body just did by itself, or something I didn't pick up that I was supposed to, or they just misinterpreted my intent behind the action.
Yep, I feel that. And that affects you all through your life. It affects you, for me, especially in the workplace, because people just...
Oh, yes.
They ascribe, like, the worst possible thing, when it could be just, like, I was focused on my work. I wasn't ignoring you. I don't hate you. But, like, for whatever reason, like, they go for the worst thing. Like, oh, she must hate us, or she's, like, stuck up, or something like that. It's like, you don't have to assume that all... Especially children. I really, truly don't believe that children are there to manipulate you. They have better things to do with their time, honestly. No, it's true. Like, kids, like, they don't come out of you angry, you know? So they don't have to go and just do things just to make you angry. That's not their, you know... I could go on and on about this, too.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. I really agree with you on that, and I really wish more people kind of understood that sometimes... people just do weird things, and sometimes they break things or whatever, but it's not like, oh, it's not because they hate you or something.
Yeah, definitely no ill intent behind the action.
And a lot of times they're just learning from the adults. I mean, you know, kind of to Kelly's point.
Oh, yeah. the hypocritical nature of being an authority. That does not escape me now as a parent, because I definitely remember it as a child.
Well, Tiffany, thanks so much for joining us today. I always learn something from you. And if you're not following Nigh Functioning Autism on Instagram, go and do that right now. Thanks so much.
Thank you.